Empirical evidence suggests that being generous and sacrificing will ultimately bring us more rewards in return. Is this your experience? What do you get by giving? And if this is so, why don't more Americans practice generosity? I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk this hour with the co-author of The Paradox of Generosity. Giving, we receive. Grasping, we lose. And we will wonder if you see the generosity paradox in your daily life. Do you consider yourself a generous person? Why or why not? Does anything hold you back? What do you get by being generous? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Christian Smith, the William R. Keenan Jr. Professor of Sociology at the University of Notre Dame, co-author with Hillary Davidson of The Paradox of Generosity. He joins us from a studio on the University of Notre Dame campus. Thank you very much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
For the purposes of our discussion, how do we define generosity?
Well, generosity we define as giving good things to other people to enhance their well-being. It doesn't have to be absolutely altruistic. We can have self-interested motives, but it's the intention and the practice of giving good things to other people for their own benefit.
And good things include money and deeds?
Money, volunteering time, loaning things, being relationally generous with our attention and our emotions. Offering to take care of things for people. You know, people need lots of different things in their lives, and generous people are willing to provide some of it.
So what's the paradox of generosity?
Well, the paradox is when normally we think about giving something away, it seems on the surface to be a loss. We used to have something, now somebody else has it and we don't have it. We think of ourselves, if we spend ourselves on something, then we're losing something, we're giving something up, and somebody else is gaining. But the paradox is that by giving away generously, we generally receive back, that by spending ourselves for others' well-being, we actually enhance our own well-being, that by letting go of what we have to some degree, we secure our own lives in that.
So talk more about how we are enhancing our own lives by giving to others.
Well, we conducted a study called The Science of Generosity where we surveyed thousands of people and interviewed many, many people. And basically what we found out was that those people who engage in generous practices, not just one-time random acts of giving, but practices like regular voluntary financial giving or regular volunteering, that these people tend to be happier, they tend to have better bodily health, they live with more purpose in life, they're more likely to avoid depression, and they have more interest in their own personal growth.
Yeah. Is it that practice of generosity that's doing all that, or are happier, healthier people more generous?
Well, what we argue in the book, these are questions of sort of causal order and direction, and they can be very tricky. But what we argue in the book is that the causal forces go both ways. It is true that people with a more positive mental outlook and more energy and to some degree more money or social network connections are probably going to be more generous. So in a way, doing better in life encourages people to be more generous. But we think the causal direction goes the other way too, and that is once people begin to practice generosity, there are a whole variety of causal mechanisms that increase their happiness and their health and their purpose in living and avoiding depression and being interested in personal growth. So in the book, we say this operates in an upward spiral or downward spirals. Once it gets going in a more generous, happier, more productive direction, everything reinforces itself in an upward spiral. If things move in the opposite direction, people become more stingy, more worried about themselves, less involved, then it moves in a downward spiral.
So that's the the grasping we lose part of this equation.
Yes, it's very clear that people who don't want to give, people who think that they live in a world of scarcity, who have a lot of fear about losing, who are more focused on themselves than helping other people, they're just not doing as well in life as people who are more open-handed, more ready to help other people.
So people who contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio, for example, are doing themselves a favor?
They are, in fact. And that's probably part of an entire way of life and orientation to life that involves sharing, a recognition that we're all in this together, that it's important to contribute to the common good. And so contributing to public radio is probably part of a general mentality and a general set of practices that's part of, for most people, a better life.
Yeah. And just kidding, sort of. But
I'm not. I think it's important.
I meant our pledge drive. We finished it up last week. We should have had you on then.
I gave to our local station here. So
I'm thinking, though, about that other part of the paradox, that by holding on to our pocketbook or our volunteer activities, that we are, you know, that we lose, and that we are worse off if we do that. Poor people that are poor. How can you give if you don't have anything to give?
Well, there are many ways to be generous in life, of course, and money is only one of them. We also know empirically from lots of studies that there's a very weak correlation between how much money or wealth people have to give and how much they give. In a way, the more people earn or the more people come to possess, for a lot of people, they actually become more fearful, more worried about losing it. Their vision of what they want to buy for themselves grows faster than their income. And so a lot of times, the more money people earn, the less generous they become. Actually, that's an empirical fact as a proportion of their income. So, and on the other side, we know some people that really don't have a lot can be extremely generous, both within the United States and overseas. A lot of people will travel to poor countries and find that those they're visiting who have very little sacrifice a lot very happily to feed them a nice dinner. But again, as I said before, people can give time if they don't have money. They can give their attention, their emotions. There are lots of ways to be generous.
Yeah. And let's talk about, despite the fact that we are better off when we give, you do say that Americans fail to live generous lives. Why is that?
Well, according to the standard measures that social scientists use to try to get at generosity, it's really a fairly small minority of Americans who give a substantial amount of money, who volunteer a lot. And that's a really good question, why people don't more, especially in light of the fact that, according to our findings, it'll be good for them. I think that to become a generous person requires getting over a certain kind of existential fear of loss. And so even though there are books like ours that say, this will be good for you, it's very hard for people, for many people at least, to really believe that and to really step out. There's a sort of a hump or hurdle that people need to get over to start really giving of themselves. And so I think behind a lot of that is a distrust, a fear, a taking care of oneself. Some people also never saw this. They never had parents that were generous. They're not part of, a religious tradition that says that you should give to other people. They just don't. There's nothing in their culture or upbringing that suggests, hey, you should spend yourself partly to help for the well-being of other people.
Yeah. So is there any way we can encourage more people to give or to be generous?
Well, of course, there are lots of opportunities already in society to be generous. There are lots of organizations that need good causes, that need donations. If people are part of religious traditions or congregations, that often will provide opportunities to be more generous. It's hard to overcome existential fear in people, but one of the reasons we wrote this book is to show it's not just ancient wisdom teachings that say it's good to be generous, but the empirical findings the empirical facts of the matter say, hey, this will be good for you. This will improve your life.
All right, well, so, yeah, your people knowing about this might encourage more people to give. But I guess I was thinking about somewhat recent trends. We have actually on the books now a requirement before Wisconsin high schoolers can graduate is that they have to do some volunteering. Is that a good idea?
I generally think it's a good idea to require a public service or volunteering of students. Yes. I mean, we live in a very individualistic society, but I think it's important for young people and everyone to realize in some way we're all tied together. The fate of any of us is tied to the whether or not we belong to a good society as a whole. And so we can't have a society where everybody for themselves. So I'm supportive of volunteering requirements. At the very least, if it doesn't change somebody's heart, it exposes them to the idea of, oh, here's an organization, and it gives them an opportunity to experience personally helping somebody else.
Yeah. And let's remind listeners that we are talking about generosity and the paradox of generosity. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, who says that the evidence suggests that being generous by giving and volunteering and sacrificing, that we will get more in return. It'll bring us more rewards in return. We will be better off. We will be happier. We will be healthier if we give. Is this your experience? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Christian Smith. He is a professor of sociology at the University of Notre Dame and co-author of The Paradox of Generosity, Giving We Receive, Grasping We Lose. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Do you consider yourself a generous person? How do you show your generosity, and what do you get out of being generous? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking about the benefits of generosity and what our guest calls the paradox of generosity. Christian Smith is the co-author of The Paradox of Generosity, Giving We Receive, Grasping We Lose. He is a professor of sociology at the University of Notre Dame. And we have many people who have thoughts on this, including a Dave from Menominee, Michigan, who emails, "We should always try to act as if the holidays are on us all year long. The people I know who give to church pantries, volunteer, or commit generous random acts are people who were in need at one time or another. Knowing the feeling of need is the factor that pushed people to give, in my experience." What about that, Professor Smith?
Something to that, and that whether somebody was actually went through a very hard time in their life and then appreciated other people's generosity, or whether people just have a general understanding that human beings are needy creatures, that we depend on each other, there's an understanding of usually with generous people, there's a sense of responsibility for each other and solidarity with other human beings that helps to motivate their generosity.
Let's go to Mike in Dubuque, Iowa. Hello, Mike.
Hi.
Yes.
Hello?
Go ahead. What is your thought on this?
Oh, I just the other day I was walking down Main Street and a homeless man come up to me and asked me for some money, and he actually wasn't homeless because he was living in a motel and he had a paycheck coming in for disability and all this. And I asked him some questions, and by the end of the conversation, I said, "You know, you actually have more income left over than I do." I said, "You know," he said, "Well, I just need some more money to be happy." And I said, "You know, money isn't going to make you happy." I said, "You need to start thinking about other people and taking care of other people in your life, because there were people he'd left behind." And he thanked me for the advice and said he was going to go read his Bible and everything. But I guess the thing was, money doesn't make you happy.
Well, money doesn't make you happy, Professor Smith?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Studies of happiness show that when one is really deprived, extra money does, like the basics, taking care of the basics with extra money does increase happiness. But then when we reach a point of minimal need satisfaction, extra money doesn't do anything to make us happy. What makes us happy is having good relationships with other people, good friends, good family. After that, money doesn't do anything for happiness.
Let me ask you to expand a little bit on the example that Mike gave. Mike thought that this man didn't necessarily need, a handout. He thought that he probably had enough money. How do we make that determination? I mean, I feel guilty if I walk by somebody who has a sign saying I will work for, food or things like that. You can't help everybody.
Correct. And when we talk about the paradox of generosity, we're not suggesting sort of indiscriminate, ignorant throwing money around to every person who says they need money. There clearly are people who are taking advantage of generous people. But generous people tend to give to things they care about, that they have a personal investment in. Usually people who practice generosity and don't just give randomly to one thing have investigated the organization or the cause they're giving to. They know something about it. They receive information about what their money is doing. So this is an important point of our book, and that is the positive benefits of being generous don't just come from one-off, one-shot generous acts. They come from practices, from something that's repeated over and over, sort of planned financial giving, regular volunteering. And when it's a practice and not just a random occurrence, that usually means that the people have figured out what they're going to give to and why, and that they really care about it. They believe in it. Some people get very involved in raising money for cancer research because somebody in their family has had cancer. And so it's very personally meaningful to them. It's not just this random stranger comes up and then it's either the person's either given to or not. So for a lot of very generous people that help homeless people, they don't just give $5 to somebody on the sidewalk. They actually find a homeless shelter or a food pantry and give that way.
Thank you, Mike. Cindy in Milwaukee is with us now. Hello, Cindy.
Well, hello, and thank you for this wonderful show. And let me just say that I'm a family doctor who has been the recipient of a very generous life. I always say I get so much more back than I give, and have had the chance to work all over the world in very resource-poor settings where, people would come up and give me their only egg from a chicken, as a gift. And so feeling the preciousness of being the recipient of others' generosity, there's this positive feedback loop that I feel has created the opportunity for me to have such a rich life. I'm just overflowing with so many positive experiences. So I understand that, but I'm wondering, how do you promote generosity in a society that is so fear-based and so fear-driven? And I think that often it's fear that keeps people from being generous. And I also think that fear is driving a lot of the political discourse and debate in our country. And how would you recommend we address that fear?
Professor Smith?
Well, those are great observations, both the positive side and the observation about fear getting in the way. I can't say I have all the solutions, but I think it begins first of all, we have to remember, even our government, however much our political discourse is in trouble these days, even our government attempts to reward financial giving by giving tax reductions for people who engage in voluntary financial giving to the right organizations. But still, for a lot of people, that doesn't seem to be able to overcome or encourage them. I think parents need to teach their children it's good to be, it's not just to protect yourself, but it's good to be kind to others. They need to model financial giving. I think for a lot of people, there's, as I said before, there's kind of an existential hump that people need to get over. Sometimes it's just a matter of you start with the behavior first, and then you build up a belief or a confidence that it's all going to work out if I continue to give. So there's a sort of fake it until you make it effect where I think it, what people can do is start off saying, you know what, I want to be a more generous person. Let me find one cause or one organization that I really care about and just start giving to it almost as an act of faith, and then realize the world didn't come to an end. I'm actually happier about this. I feel good about myself. And then once the trickle gets started, people can grow into more generous lives.
Cindy, are you still – I'm sorry, Cindy – can I ask you something? When you said that as a physician, you've had the opportunity to help all over the world, you're in essence donating or giving medical services to people?
Yes. Mm. So I travel. I'm very involved in global health initiatives, and so I started in the 1980s going to Uganda, working in a remote village where I was the medical director, and I trained village health workers. And I thought I was going to give my talents and skills to others, and I did that to a small extent. But I've said it's been one of the richest experiences of my life because it opened me up to the power of the community and the generosity of people who were living in such low resource settings, but were so generous of their spirits, and they were able to be happy and to give and to dance and sing and embrace me and my family, and it changed our lives. And I'm grateful to this day for that experience. And it was, you know, I thought I was giving, but I ended up getting so much more in return.
Well, that's the paradox of generosity, isn't it, Professor?
That's it right there, yeah. Earlier, the word guilt came up, and I think guilt is, in general, a terrible motivator for anything. I think sometimes guilt can get people to do things they need to do. But in general, generosity driven by guilt isn't all that productive or fruitful. It just relieves people for the moment. I think people need to give more, the kind of generosity that's really good for people is more driven by care, genuine care and concern for the well-being of others, and the wanting to be a generous person, the desire to say, this is the kind of person I want to be for others. That's what turns out to be really rewarding. So maybe if guilt gets people started, okay, but it has to. But generosity in the end can't be fueled by just guilt.
Thank you, Cindy, so much for calling and sharing your experience. And I would be the one who brought up that word guilt. I'm wondering, Professor Smith, how does compassion fatigue play into all of this? Is that one reason why people might not be generous, because there are just so many things that need our generosity?
Yeah, it's true. Sometimes the world can become overwhelming. There are so many needs. There are so many good causes. But I think generous people who are doing well in life, what they do, as I said before, is they find one thing or a small number of things that they really care about, and they invest in those. And then they're able to tell themselves, I can't change the whole world. I'm not going to be able to fix every problem, but I'm doing what I want to do and what I should do about the things I most care about. And if a lot more people did that, then we would have a lot more needs taken care of. Another factor related to compassion fatigue that's involved in all this is some people distrust organizations. They would like to give money to a good cause, but they are fearful of a scandal or that their money's being misused. And so I think there's a burden on those who are asking for money or need money to demonstrate that they're using it wisely, that they have integrity, and to build trust overall in the system of giving and receiving.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Christian Smith, a professor of sociology at the University of Notre Dame, co-author of The Paradox of Generosity, Giving We Receive, Grasping We Lose. And our next caller is William in Hales Corners. Hi, William.
Good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to comment on the gentleman's topic this morning, or your topic, actually. On generosity. I come from a Polynesian culture. My father is Tongan from the Kingdom of Tonga in the South Pacific. And I just wanted to comment on how we, as the Tongan people, we have we have a way of giving of ourselves rather than it shows them how rich we are, you know. And it sounds like I'm being foolish, but we give to the people that need things around us. And this is a happiness for us. This is a way of giving, and I don't know if it shows people that we're wealthy or not, but it gives us a feeling that we are wealthy, I guess, in a way. I'm not sure if I'm making myself clear.
Well, I think I get it. Do you get it, Professor Smith?
Yes, I do. And again, I think it underscores the fact that there are different ways to be prosperous and wealthy, and some and that this varies by culture. There are some cultures that think what really matters is having huge amounts of money piled up in savings. And then there are other cultures that say, you know, the way to be happy, the way to be prosperous is to share with other people. And so the more cultures can encourage generosity, I think the better that society will be.
Did you research other cultures in terms of, I mean, are other cultures more generous than Americans?
There are different ways to be generous. Our study wasn't cross-cultural, although my larger project did fund some projects that were studying other cultures. But there are ways to be generous through sort of systemic programs that are funded by taxes and governments. There are ways that people are just extremely informally generous with their neighbors, as our one caller said, by giving one egg. So there definitely are differences in cultures in the institutional bases of generosity and the expectations and the encouragements and socialization of people how to be generous with each other.
And do you think there's anything uniquely American that's holding us back from our generosity, anything that is embedded in our culture?
Well, I think our culture is complex, and so I think that there are aspects of our culture that believe in local volunteering and civic involvement that encourage generosity. And the United States, for better or worse, is a relatively religious nation, and religious people and organizations tend to be more generous. That's an empirical fact. But we also have an individualistic, competitive, materialistic side of American culture that I think feeds into and encourages the fear and everybody for themselves kind of mentality. So, yeah, I do think there are parts of American culture that undermine generosity.
You touched on it, but talk a little bit more on what role religion plays in our generosity.
In general, religious Americans tend to give more money than not religious Americans. Part of that is their opportunities. If you go to a religious congregation from various traditions, usually there's an opportunity to donate money either to the religious organization or through the religious organization to other local or regional or national needs. Most religions teach normatively, morally, that giving is good, it's better to give than to receive. And so part of it's an opportunity factor, part of it's social networks. More religious people tend to be, more involved in organizations that provide more opportunities to connect with people, to see more need, to volunteer. So there's everything from religious teachings to concrete opportunities to give. Some religious traditions teach tithing. You should actually give one-tenth of one's income. There's a lot of sociological dynamics that help explain why religion encourages more generosity.
Thanks, William, for the call. Karen in Milwaukee is with us now. Hello, Karen.
Hello. I used to have money, and I gave a lot away. And then I lost it all. And at first, the worst thing about it was losing touch with that part of myself that was so giving and feeling like I had nothing left to give. And I was really depressed. And then I became inspired to start donating blood on a regular basis again. And then I went to a food pantry and I noticed that they needed help. So I volunteer there now. And I am discovering that even though I don't have what I had before, I still have plenty to give.
Well, bless you, Karen, for all of your giving. But when you say that you used to have a lot of money and then you lost it, was it because of giving it all away?
Well, I No.
Okay.
No, it was because of crime and illness.
Yeah, circumstances, other circumstances. Well, what's your reaction to that, Professor Smith?
Yeah, I think that's a great illustration of the general point, which is there's many ways to be generous. We don't just have money to give. We have time, we have blood, we have body organs, we have attention. Some people just need attention. They need someone to sit with them and to care for them and to stick with them. That can be the most valuable thing for some people to receive. I know of programs in hospitals where babies in neonatal intensive care or PICUs just need an adult to come in and hold them and rock them for an hour. That's an amazing gift to be able to give to someone who's so little they have no idea that they're even being given to exactly. But so it's not all about money. There are many ways to be generous.
And isn't that something, though, Professor Smith? Here we have somebody through medical issues and crime loses much of her wealth, but still gives. She didn't crawl into a corner.
Yes, and I think it reflects something about Karen's sense of herself. This is not just a matter of doing something. It's a matter of her identity. She said she lost a part of herself, that she wanted to be the kind of person and understand herself and experience herself as the kind of person who is continually giving to others. And I think that that's really what we're getting at, is not just a one-off thing again, but the sense of a developing sense of who I am, the kind of person I want to be and the kind of life I want to live. And when that's the kind of person you are, really you want to be happy by being generous.
We are talking about being generous and the benefits of being generous, the benefits to society and the benefits to ourselves. Talking about the science that is out there, the evidence that suggests that being generous through charitable contributions, volunteering, other forms of being generous will bring us more rewards in return, that we will get more, we will be happier, we will be healthier. The more generous that we are. On the other hand, if we are kind of stingy or hold back in giving to others, that we lose out, that we're worse off. So we're talking about what is the paradox of generosity with Christian Smith, who is a professor of sociology at the University of Notre Dame. And we are welcoming your questions. We're welcoming any examples that you might have. So do you consider yourself a generous person, and what do you get by being generous? Do you sense a link between generosity and the well-being in your life? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking with a guest about the paradox of generosity. Christian Smith, a professor of sociology at the University of Notre Dame, is the co-author of The Paradox of Generosity. And we welcome your questions and examples at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Brock in Madison is with us now. Hi, Brock.
Hi, and good morning to you and to Professor Smith. I'm finding this to be a very interesting conversation. As someone who grew up on a farm where you basically would give the shirt off your back to help anyone in need, I moved to the big city of Madison, which to me is a very big city, not too long ago, a few years ago. And what I wanted to comment on and get kind of a perspective on was this tends to be the time of year when a lot of employers are doing outreach to their employees, looking to help organizations, nonprofits, by asking the employees to contribute money that would then be taken out of their paycheck, deducted on a monthly or one-time basis. And my question to that is, while I definitely support the worthy causes that are out there, at a time when we're still trying to make ends meet for many people from the 2008 recession, do employees look at that negatively and are less likely to donate because they feel they themselves do not have enough money in their pockets?
Professor Smith?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that these kind of programs can they can be mixed. For some people, the opportunity to give through work and to be given concrete information about various places they may give, for example, to the United Way, can be a really helpful opportunity for them and really provide them information and opportunity to do what they want to do in being a generous person. I think it can also generate for people who are less interested in giving more guilt. And sometimes people may give at the workplace simply to conform or to feel like they're being pressured to give. So I do not believe that generosity that's basically motivated out of conformity or social pressure is really all that productive, or is really going to be all, in terms of the paradox, is really going to help people who are givers. I think generosity really is a virtue that needs to be learned and practiced, ultimately from the heart, so to speak, for it to really thrive in society and to be good for people. So I'm not against those workplace giving programs, but I think we have to be careful that we don't turn them into a way that the corporation just says, look how generous we are, and by putting pressure on employees.
Thank you.
I also would say that it's okay for some people to know that at this time in my life, I don't really have the resources to give money. I'll be generous in some other way, but to not feel guilty or pressured in all of this.
All right, Brock, thanks very much for the call. Sarah in Park Falls is with us now. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Yes, what do you think?
In this age of entitlement, you have a person that is extremely generous and gives of themselves. I'm not talking financially, but goes out of their way to give of themselves to help other people, and receives no recognition in return. Often can be depressing for that person. I was just wondering what professor's take is on that.
Yeah. For example, you know, somebody who gives and gives and gives and doesn't even receive a thank you, Professor Smith.
Yeah, I think that's a problem when that happens. And again, I would go back to the giving person needs to evaluate what are they giving to, why are they giving, what do they care about. If they're giving to people that's really accomplishing nothing or not generating some larger positive outcome, they may want to reconsider that. I think there are very many worthy organizations and causes, however, that are grateful, that provide positive information, and sort of they close the information loop. So I do think it's very important for people to have a sense, I gave and I accomplished something in the world. This actually did something good that I know about. So I think there are some cases where people really need to rethink. Are they spending themselves for causes or people that it's really not accomplishing much or not doing much good in the world? Related to that, I would say in our book we talk about a small number of people who we say are pathologically generous. That is, they give in a way that really destroys themselves. They give out of guilt, or they're not giving ultimately to help other people. They're giving because they need affirmation. They need recognition. They're giving just to take care of some desperate need that they feel in themselves. And that's not good for them or for anyone they give to. Giving needs to be done out of a sense of having one's life together, of wanting to be a generous person, not of desperately trying to, in an almost dysfunctional or pathological way, to fill some need of oneself.
Yeah, and certainly not saying that was what was going on with Sarah, but it should, I mean, should the giver of generosity, well, most of us are probably doing this because it makes us feel good and we don't necessarily need any public recognition. Should we, though? Should we feel bad if we at least would like, hey, thanks?
No, I don't think that that's bad at all. Mm-hmm. I think I think when people give, they should be thanked.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes people want to give completely anonymously. They positively don't want anyone to know that they gave, and that's fine. But I think it's also good for people to, for example, there are programs where people support children in other countries who are really desperate, and then they get letters from those children saying, thank you, here's what's going on in my life, I appreciate your helping me. That's perfectly normal. That's perfectly good. There's no reason for people to have to be purely and anonymously altruistic.
What about the how should the recipients of generosity respond?
Well, that's a good question. I must say we didn't study that, yeah. And that can be tricky because generosity in its worst forms can sometimes be used to manipulate people or control people, and it can be very hard it actually can be harder to receive other people's generosity than to give generosity. But I really think if somebody is receiving other people's generous help, when they know that they are genuinely cared for or loved, I think that they can accept that they can say thank you,
mm-hmm.
And that they can and just leave it at that or go from there and then themselves learn to be generous to somebody else in some other way.
Park, I'm sorry, I don't know who this is in Shell Lake. What is your name, caller?
My name is Trudy.
Hi, Trudy.
T-R-U-D-Y. I'm from Shell Lake, Wisconsin, in the very far corners of the Northwest.
Oh, yes, and I we just had a little glitch with our computer, and your name was blocked out. But Trudy, thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I just wanted to tell you what a wonderful community I live in. I belong to a little organization that has 9 ladies in it, and every year we have one fundraiser in a little tiny community called Indian Creek. It has 2 buildings and a couple of homes, and in one of the buildings we have a dance and a silent auction and a luncheon and a lot of donations from local businesses. Each year we raise close to $4,000. There is no major industry in our area, some small farms, some lumbering, some small businesses. But people come together. They have a really wonderful time. They're so generous with their donations. And because there are only 9 of us, can you imagine how much help we have with people who step in and say, well, I'll serve, or I'll take care of this, or I'll help sweep, or I'll put the chairs away. And people have come together, and what we do with the money that we raise is give back monetary gifts to needy families in Washburn and Burnett County. And I think it's just another vote of faith for the people who live up here, and we struggle to survive sometimes. But even though we're struggling, we just come together to help each other as much as we can.
Oh, Trudy, that's
wonderful. I'd like to add one more item,
mm-hmm.
Or another thought. I have found that when I personally cannot financially get involved with something, that a phone call or giving somebody a ride or going to a church dinner with someone who doesn't get out very often, that those are some of the most gratifying ways to help that you can possibly do. It's just giving without money works.
Sure does. Thank you, Trudy. And I love you can do it individually. Doesn't have to cost you a lot of money, and you can do it as a community. It sounds like, Professor Smith.
Yes, and I think Trudy's story is a perfect illustration of exactly what our book is talking about. People. They don't do it for the benefit to themselves, but when they do act generously, lo and behold, they do reap a benefit for themselves. To put it in the other way, if you think about the word miser is etymologically very closely related to the word misery, and so it goes in both directions.
Yeah, misery or miserable if you're a miser. Dave in Elroy. Hello, Dave.
Hi. I just had a little kind of, it's somewhat humorous, but there's really more to it than that. But George Carlin used to have a routine where one of his lines was, if we're here to help others, what are the others here for? And it's just kind of funny, but it also makes you think a little bit about why you're doing this. That's all I had to say.
Say it. Did you catch that, Professor?
Yes.
Smith?
If we're here to help others, what are the others here for? And I think the answer is everybody. The world is not divided into the givers and receivers. Everybody is in some way a receiver and dependent on others, and everyone needs to and is or should be at least a giver. So at certain times we feel like we give, but at other times we receive or we need. Even if it was just when we were children, we needed other people to give to us. And there are probably ways that we receive from other people that we're just not aware of. And so part of being a generous person is to become more in tune with all the ways that everybody needs everybody else.
Next, we go to Mary in Park Falls. Hello, Mary.
Hi. Thanks for sharing the stories this morning. I just have a little comment and a little story to tell you. I had a priest friend who had moved out to transferred out to New Mexico to a pretty poor Indian reservation parish. And at Easter time, I decided, well, I'm going to send him $50 for jelly beans for the kids. And the next day, I got in the mail from my insurance company that I had overpaid my insurance by $52. So I'm just not only that, but in other ways, just think you get back so much more when you give.
Wow. So you got some karma going your way, you think there, Mary?
I don't know, whatever, but it just is a good feeling, I guess.
And sure is. And I hope those kids like their jelly beans. That was
yeah. Well, he had said that they when they go home on the weekends and they come back to the school on Monday, they're so hungry. So they, you know, you just give when you, and it's nice to have, like you said before, you pick one or two things, and if you don't give to something else, you know you're going to do something for someone else in the charity or the person that you feel knows will benefit from your contribution.
Yeah, that's very cool. And what about that karma, Professor Smith?
Yeah, I think that's how generous people experience the world, and that is independent of actually how many dollars they have in the bank. Generous people tend to view the whole world as more that they're living in a world of abundance and blessing. And people that are not generous tend, net of however much money they have, tend to view that they live in a world of scarcity, which relates to fear. And so it's, again, this gets back to the basic paradox that people that understand I live in a world of abundance and blessing are just generally going to be more open, more happy, more related to other people. It's going to be better for them. If those who in their heads live in a world of scarcity and fear, that's just not as much of a happy life.
Yeah. Well, we have just a minute or so to go. Do we know all we need to know about the science of generosity?
No, there's a lot more research that needs to be done, and what really needs to be figured out better are the causal mechanisms that help to produce this paradox of generosity. In the book, we try to specify 9 different mechanisms, and that is, it's not just there's a correlation between generosity and doing better in life, but what actually produces it. And so there's a lot of research that can be done even in, say, biochemical systems of the brain. How are things like dopamine and oxytocin triggered by practicing generosity? So now there's a lot more research that can be done on this to understand it better.
Well, this has been a very fascinating conversation, and I feel better after talking about this. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Christian Smith is a professor of sociology at the University of Notre Dame, and he is the co-author with Hillary Davidson of The Paradox of Generosity, Giving We Receive, Grasping We Lose. Thanks to Christy Taylor and Cynthia Schuster and Brianne Chasso for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. Coming up tomorrow at this time, the first gubernatorial debate is behind us. Another one is coming up on Friday night. We will talk tomorrow at this time with 2 guests from different perspectives about the top political news issues of the week. It's the Week in Review every Friday at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.